This week on Underdogs, we are looking at the NFL Christmas Day slate and building a parlay and checking it twice. We've got an amazing story from 30 years ago that you're going to want to hear about one of the weirdest days in NFL history, and then an abbreviated version of our NFL Underdog picks.
Wait, Kadarius Toney just came down my chimney early.
The cry goes up both far and near for Underdog.
Underdog.
Countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. You believe in miracles? Yes!
By George, the dream is alive.
Underdog.
And I guess there's only one thing left to do. Win the whole fucking thing.
It's the Underdogs back with you for a special football Christmas episode of the show. I'm Jordan Brenner, joined as always by my co-host, Peter Keating. Are you ready for some football?
Jordan, I'm ready for some football. I'm ready for some Christmas football. You know, the NFL is invading, trying to take over Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. Puts me in mind, you know, we're all looking for a non-sectarian, stay away from the battles over woke holiday greeting. Well, Jordan, in 1997, Barry Sanders went over 2,000 yards right before the holidays, mm-hmm. knocked the Jets out of the playoffs. And the next day, the headline in the Detroit Free Press is what I want to wish everybody, which is Barry Christmas.
Do you know how many times he has said that in a text or something else over the past week?
Barry Christmas, everybody. Barry Christmas.
It's just getting insufferable. Now, we will be doing a special NBA Christmas show as well. So we want to see the battle, our battle of NBA versus NFL, which draws more interest. So,
is there a guy named Barry in the NBA we could repeat that with? Or whose name can we attach to a holiday greeting?
Obviously, it'd be Brent Barry Christmas.
Brent Barry Christmas.
Yeah.
All right, I'll keep looking. Till our show, I'll keep looking for a better greeting than Brent. But Brent Barry's, that's not a low bar. That's okay. Yeah.
But on this football show, a little later, we're going to tell you an amazing story, a tale of a day 30 years ago that was so strange, we almost can't do it justice, but we will try. We'll have an abbreviated version of the Underdog contest. But first, like we did on Thanksgiving, we're going to have some fun with the three Christmas Day games. We're going to build a little parlay that you'll be able to find on DraftKings to bet along with it if you want. We're going to sort of embrace our theme of underdogs, as you'll see. But let's start out with the first game of the day. That is the Raiders traveling to Kansas City to play the Chiefs. The current spread is the Raiders are getting 10 points.
It's double digits. The spread has reached double digits. Raiders, Chiefs.
The total in that game, I believe, is 41.5.
Yeah.
So Peter, you know, obviously we can look at props too, but I think we're both eyeing the same. Actually, the total's down to 41 now, but we're both eyeing the same bet, I think. We like the Raiders plus 10, right?
Jordan, the key here is that the Chiefs are extraordinarily popular with the betting public. As a result, maybe not even through any fault of their own, they don't perform very well as big favorites. I believe Patrick Mahomes is 9-13 career when he's a 10 plus favorite. It's just because people overinvest in the Chiefs, which distorts the betting line. Look, the Raiders have been playing pretty well. The Raiders have some threats. They've been fighting hard under Antonio Pierce. They always play the Chiefs tough. This is a divisional rematch late in the season. Feels like a close game. Looks from the numbers like a close game. I do think there'll be some points put up in this game because neither secondary has been playing all that well, and there are good receiving options. But 10 is a huge spread given the relative strengths of these teams.
Yeah, so I don't agree with you on the points in this one. I think I'm staying away from the over-under, but the Chiefs offense is a mess right now. No matter how you slice it, they are clearly thin at the receiver position. Travis Kelce has not been putting up Kelce-like numbers for a while, whether there's a decline or it's just that defenses are keen on
him. You're not
going to
blame Taylor Swift, are you?
I would never blame Taylor Swift for anything other than, you know, just occupying
tis the damn season, Jordan.
Everything I listen to in the car with my daughter. But otherwise, their offense is a little bit broken. They do not have receivers who can get separation. Rashee Rice is really the only option. Kadarius Toney, I think you're seeing why the Giants traded him and laughed all the way to the bank on that one.
Have you seen the meme of the guy who followed Kadarius Toney to work?
No.
Kadarius Toney is beyond the red light in the box blocking traffic from all directions. Get it?
No.
He's offsides at a traffic intersection.
Oh, yes, great. Okay, where? Jeez.
But Jordan, wait a minute. Are you talking about the Chiefs through last week or the Chiefs through today? Because Rashee Rice had a great game last week. Why is Rashee Rice? They've been experimenting with all these other options of guys who have the dropsies or can't stay behind the line of scrimmage. How is Rashee Rice not the answer to exactly
because
what you're talking about?
He's been good. You need more than one wide receiver to get separation.
With Kelsey, maybe you need that one.
Rashee Rice has been playing well for weeks. It wasn't just last week against the Patriots. And this offense is still not functioning at a high level. To be perfectly honest, I think the Chiefs' defense right now is the better unit. But I think the Raiders, look, they played a couple weeks ago. It was a 31-17 Chiefs victory, but it was a... I think it was 21-17 going into the fourth quarter.
Through three quarters, as usual, the Raiders-Chiefs battle. These teams still hate each other for historical reasons.
You don't know what you're going to get necessarily of Aiden O'Connell. That the Raiders' offense is far from great, even though they scored 63 points against a broken Chargers team. But I think, look, they've been playing hard under Antonio Pierce. Their defense is producing. Josh Jacobs is trending in the right direction. Jameer White played in his absence. So, look, first leg of our parlay, we're going to throw the Raiders plus 10 up there. That takes us to the next interesting game of the day, one that, you know, we're all truly going to enjoy with a nice long nap because I'm back to I can't watch the Giants anymore. And, yes, it's the Giants at the Eagles. The Eagles are favored by a dozen points. The over-under is 42.5.
Are you planning a big dinner on the 25th? Is that why you're going to nap? Or are you actually outright saying the Giants would put you to sleep? Or you're just not even going to... You don't even turn them on. You're going to take that as your rest, the rest period for your day.
I have alternative plans that day on vacation. Let's put it that way. But, Peter, I think there's a smart way to bet this. I don't like dealing with lines as big as 12 generally. If I had to guess, the Eagles will blow the Giants out. But I think there's a better way to approach this, and I think you do too.
I think there's going to be a low-scoring game. I mean, the Eagles' offense has been dysfunctional for a while now. It's past the point where we can say they're just going to come back because they were opponents keyed on the right players or something accidental happened. It's been a month. They're out of sync. And the Giants have been out of sync since about, I don't know, August 1st. So it's hard to see this game reaching 40, let over whatever the over-under is going to settle at.
So interestingly enough, last year these teams met in January. If you remember, the Eagles were favored by 17 because the Giants, it didn't matter for them. They were playing all their backups. And it was even in that game, with the Eagles had a better, more functional offense last year, the final score, and again, the total was 42.5, just like this year. Final score was 22-16 Eagles. I'm not saying it's going to be a direct carbon copy, but to your point, first of all, how do you beat the Eagles? Well, you pick on their corners right now, okay? You throw deep, you expose them. The Giants don't have wide receivers who can get separation against you, and they can't.
You mean against me personally?
Yeah.
That is a woeful tale.
So, and their line doesn't protect well enough to take the time to beat those corners. So I just, even though the Eagles defense is not playing at a Super Bowl level right now, the Giants offense is not the type of unit that can exploit what the Eagles do poorly. And then flip it, yes, the Eagles are a good offensive team, but the Giants defense has been playing well. And honestly, if you don't think the Giants are going to score more than 10 to 14 points, then you're relying on the Eagles to score 30 plus.
Exactly. That's the thing. Over. This is where basic math hits you because I don't think the Giants are in position to keep getting shut out or scoring 3 or 6 or 7 points a game because, look, the Eagles last year led the league in sacks. We know Tommy DeVito takes sacks on 18% of his dropbacks, but the Eagles are only 14th in the league in sacks right now. They're also giving up a surprisingly middle-of-the-pack yards per attempt because their secondary is aging and vulnerable. And so I think the Giants will take some shots, maybe score some points. But at this spread, I think the fact that the game's going to be close just means it's going to be a low-scoring game. It doesn't mean the Eagles are going to, you know, fail to run away with it in some kind of shootout. You can hit the Eagles over the middle. They're going to take some shots. They might be successful, but that doesn't mean this is going to go sailing beyond 40, 41 points in the total.
My fear is that the Giants are so bad that the Eagles could have one big blowout game where they score 38. But if you're looking at what they've done lately, scored 20 points against Seattle, 13 against Dallas, 19 against San Francisco. They put up 37 against Buffalo, but then going back, 21 against Kansas City, 28 against Dallas. Unless the Eagles hit 30, I don't think this is hitting over, because I don't think the Giants are scoring more than 10 points this game.
The Eagles are also the third luckiest team, according to Action Network data, in the league, even now, even after a series of close games where they came back to earth a little. Also, only 18% of bets, but 38% of the money is on the Giants in this game. These are just little tremors that indicate the game is not going to be a blowout by more than the spread. And given that and the math, looks like a low-scoring total contest.
Yeah, again, this has 27-10
exactly
written over
right,
it to me.
Right. I mean, the Eagles could win comfortably without getting close to the over-under here.
Right. All right, so our second leg of this parlay, Giants-Eagles under 42.5, which brings us to the nightcap, maybe the best game of the year. You've got the NFC leading San Francisco 49ers at home against the Baltimore Ravens, who lead the AFC. The Niners are favored by 5 points. Okay? Now, I know what you're going to say in a second. I just want to say I do think the Niners are the best team in football. They would be my pretty comfortable pick to win the Super Bowl right now. I do think they're a better team than the Ravens. But 5 points is a lot.
5 points is a lot. Maybe there's a couple of points difference between these teams. Home field does count for something. But let me just cite three things.
Okay.
One is the Ravens giving up 4.5 net yards per attempt. That's number one by a huge margin. It's half a yard better than Cleveland. Everyone else in the league is over five. I mean, they're not just a good defensive team. They're a great defensive team against the pass. They've allowed 14 touchdowns overall. 14 touchdowns overall. Four rushing touchdowns all year. Jordan, there are teams that have given up 20 rushing touchdowns in this league. The Ravens are at four. Number one in the league in 50 sacks. They are a difficult team to move the ball on. But here's what maybe not be as appreciated. Now, I know Mitchell is hurt and he's out. However, the Ravens have been running the ball about half the time over the past month, and they've been extremely effective at it. Here's what people might not know. The 49ers are allowing 4.9 yards per carry, 6 yards per carry on first downs to running backs. That's the second worst number in the league. You put these two forces together, Baltimore has been extraordinarily effective on third downs. Now, look, usually I'm like, third down data, small sample size, always regresses to the mean. But the Ravens, 67% success on third and short. That's sixth best in the league. The Niners, 68% allowed, okay? Fifth worst in the league on third and short. The Ravens are great against the pass. They're tough against the run, but they can sustain drives on the ground. And then there's Lamar. Well, Lamar's having as great a season as Brock Purdy. It's just in his non-traditional way that he plays, it looks surprising. When a guy creates 8 seconds in the pocket and then wings it somewhere, it almost looks like he's successful by accident.
Well,
he's successful by design, Jordan, and it's time the league and the fans realize this.
I think people realize that Lamar Jackson's a pretty good quarterback.
Really? Was he your MVP pick in the preseason? Were the Ravens your Super Bowl pick in the preseason? Because they were mine, and I'm sticking with them.
Great.
Please.
I mean, you can have a cookie to celebrate that. But look, you didn't even mention was—
A Barry Christmas cookie?
What you didn't even mention was that, and you've probably heard the stat by now, Lamar Jackson against the spread is 11-1 as an underdog.
Oh, that's
in his
right.
Career.
Look, usually when people say we're disrespected, I'm like, yeah, whatever, just go play. Everybody who's an underdog is disrespected, except they are disrespected.
So Lamar,
11-1
is
the opposite of Mahomes is Lamar.
11-1 is an underdog. In those 12 games, they've won 8 of them outright. They've only been an underdog once this year. They won outright at Cincinnati.
They sure did.
And it's not like you're only getting a field goal here. That's the thing. I hear some of what you're saying. San Francisco is a different animal, man. Those playmakers, it's not like the Ravens are lining up against a conventional offense. They can just get the ball to guys like Debo Samuel and Christian McCaffrey in space, and it is different defending the pass against the Niners than any other offense. They're that good. And they've got playmakers all over the field. Ayuk, Kittle. So I'm not ready to
anoint. That's true. That's why they're favored. Their strength of schedule is essentially equal to the Ravens this year.
I'm not ready to anoint the
Ravens. Niners like world beaters. The Ravens have beaten just about as tough opposition.
I'm not ready to anoint the Ravens' defense as great yet, especially. And more to the point, I think the Niners can score points on
anyone. They're giving up 4 yards a pass, and they lead the league in sacks, and they stop the run.
Yeah, I think the Niners' offense, is a different kettle of fish. But, again, it's not like the Ravens are only getting a field goal here. They're getting five. So, look. Money line, I would still bet the. You know, I'm not going to bet the. I don't think the Ravens are going to win outright.
Well, the Niners are at home.
But I will take the 5 points in this game. I still think the Niners are going to win the Super Bowl. But let's look. What a great way to finish off Christmas with a night game like this. So let's all make a little money.
It's a great fantasy football game, too. If you're in your playoffs, if players all over the field, Christmas night is fantastic.
All right. Well, let's make a little money. If you're rolling with us on the DraftKings parlay, again, you've got. The Raiders getting 10 at Kansas City. You've got the Giants and Eagles under 42.5 points, and the Ravens getting 5 points at the 49ers. If you're scoring at home, that's an under and two underdogs. True to our show's title. Hopefully, we'll all enjoy some Christmas cash, and we'll be back with an abbreviated Underdogs Underdogs contest and a great story after this.
Underdog! 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 Underdog, underdog.
We're back. Now, Peter, we've been talking about the games on Christmas Day, but the day after, Boxing Day, as it's known, is cool for another reason. It's the 30-year anniversary of what may be one of the weirdest days in NFL history. A couple weeks ago, there was all this noise about the Steelers and the Patriots game hitting an over-under of 30, okay? Do you know that no game has had a total under 30 in 30 years?
30 years.
And not one, not two, but three games that day were under 30. December 26th, 1993. We just wrote about it in The Athletic, but we want to talk about it on the pod too because it was that weird. You had the Colts playing the Patriots with an over-under of 28. You had the Lions playing the Bears, also with an over-under of 28. And the Saints played the Eagles with an over-under of 29.5. If that wasn't weird enough, all sorts of crazy stuff happened that day, including the birth of the Lambeau Leap on a Leroy Butler.
Leroy Butler jumped
touchdown.
Into the stands.
Yep. So, you know, it was really cool to go down memory lane for this piece. But what a strange turn of events that in 30 years, there's never been a total this low, and there were three on the same day.
So you start out with those low expectations because it's the end of the year. It was a strange year in that there were two byes that year.
Yep.
So we're talking about week 17, but the penultimate week of the season.
Right.
Put that together with injuries, cold weather matchups between desperate teams. So expectations were actually low for scoring. But what's interesting is the teams blew through those over-unders. And at least, was it in all three cases?
All three cases.
Right?
One by a massive. So the first one was this Patriots-Colts debacle. Two awful teams coming into the game. It was the Patriots. It was their first year under Bill Parcells.
Right. So you could see the beginnings of Parcells bringing in his guys.
Right. Drew Bledsoe was a rookie. Well, the Patriots won 38-0, which led Ted Marchabrota, the Colts coach, after the game to say, quote, "I've never been associated with a club that played as bad as we played today," end quote. They said, "We can't bring anything positive out of this one at all. It was just a total breakdown all the way through." So that's how the game started before less than 27,000 fans at Foxborough. Then we had Lions-Bears, which...
Lions-Bears, where it gets worse, right? It's at Soldier Field. It's freezing. Wind chill, -8. Lions... starting their third quarterback after three quarterback controversies of the year. That would be Eric Kramer after Rodney Peete, and maybe the most forgotten Heisman winner of all time, Andre Ware, was in there for a couple of games. They're down to their third string running back, a guy named Eric Lynch, who was subbing for the guy who was subbing for Barry Sanders, who was out. That's right, the Lions are in the middle of their Wayne Fonts era, where they played barely .500, couldn't buy a win in the playoffs, even though Sanders was rushing for like 1,500 yards every season. He was out that game. But Eric Lynch had a good game, and the Bears could not move the ball. The Bears, led by quarterback Jim Harbaugh, who had a really rough season. One of the things about 1993 was it was the very beginnings of free agency. And the Bears fans treated Jim Harbaugh so horribly that year, he took the first freaking train out as a free agent to go to Indianapolis. Bears won 2014 in those frigid, brutal conditions.
And then last up, from the vet, you had the Saints at the Eagles. The over-under was 29.5 that game. They blew past it. Eagles 37, Saints 26. They scored 63 points. What the hell happened?
Okay, so we got some flack for mentioning the Philly fans throwing batteries or whatever they did to Santa Claus back in the 60s.
Those snowballs.
Snowballs. Yeah, well, they threw batteries at other people, right, over the years.
Stop picking on Philly.
Oh, please. You know, the jail under the stadium. Anyway, the vibe there was actually not terrible because even though it was even colder than at Soldier Field because the Eagles fans were in love with, that's right, backup quarterback Bubby Brister. He allegedly was bringing a spark to the team. And the Saints were playing a backup too. Mike Buck making his first, I think his only NFL start out of the University of Maine, out of Saville High School, where I may have graduated from. A horrendous performance by the Saints. What happened was that, yes, the conditions were brutal. Players couldn't hang on to the ball. They couldn't hang on to each other. They couldn't make tackles. They were missed extra points. But in this case, that led to defensive and special team scores. Eric Allen, two pick sixes for the Saints. The Saints blew by, won 37-26. And sadly enough, that was kind of the end of the great Bears teams. A whole bunch of guys left. Richard Dent left. Steve McMichael left. Harbaugh left. Neil Anderson retired. That was it.
Well,
a crazy underdoggy day.
That's right. And we didn't even get into the fact that the leading passer that day was a guy named TJ Rubley.
You're going to do a book on this guy. This guy's story.
Who ended up coaching Keanu Reeves on the set of The Replacements. But you can see more if you go to the Athletic website, our article's there. In the meantime, before we go, we're going to do an abbreviated version of our NFL underdog contest. Team Sarah, led by our producer Sarah McCrory, and all our guests continue to lead the way. I remain in second place. Peter's in third. This week, we're each going to pick one game because, look, a couple of the picks we liked, we already included in our parlay, the Ravens, the Raiders. So it'll go Peter, then Sarah will tell me her pick, and I will go third. So Peter, start us off. You've got a reduced board, especially because we can't pick the Thursday night game. We're recording this on Thursday. By the time this comes out, it'll be over. So where are you going?
Jordan, the board is hobbled, but I am not. I would have liked the Ravens or the Raiders. Instead, I'm going to go with the team that brought me points last week, the worst team in football. Give me the Carolina Panthers +5 at home versus the Packers. 31% of the bets are on Carolina, but 68% of the money is. It's always worth, now Carolina won last week by the dominant score of 9-7. It's always worth to bet against the public after a game as bad as that. They're a home dog. The over-under is 36.5. It's going to be a close, nasty game. And it's time to keep in mind that Carolina's been the unluckiest team in football. They're terrible, but they're not as terrible as they look. I actually think it's going to be a really interesting spot for a new coach to step in with Bryce Young without a top draft pick, but it's a core of players who aren't playing as badly as their record suggests, and they're getting 5 points. Give me Carolina.
All right. Sarah, who are you taking? Oh, in my ear. Yes, you're going to be shocked to hear this, but our producer, Sarah McCrory, is taking the Giants.
Live from the control booth, a Giants pick. Here we go.
+12 against the Eagles. I don't even think an explanation is necessary. Her family did make chicken cutlets to honor Tommy DeVito last weekend. That did not work out well in New Orleans, but she's going back to the well with the
Jordan,
Giants.
Jordan, the spread is huge, but it is a divisional game. The Giants are motivated, and I think they're going to – you don't, but I think they're going to be able to move the ball a little bit against the Eagles.
I have the third pick, and I am taking the Cardinals +4 at the Bears. Kyler Murray, very quietly, has been an amazing road underdog quarterback. 15-4-2 in his career as a road underdog. I like getting more than a field goal anytime you're going against a relatively bad team, which the Bears are. I'm not saying the Cardinals are great. They're not. But there's a lot of just crappy games this week. You know, I don't want to touch the Commanders at the Jets. I don't want to take the Patriots at the Broncos. So give me Kyler and his outstanding road dog record +4 at the Bears.
Jordan, I would go so far as to say Kyler Murray's had a very quiet comeback season. We talked about Arizona before the year as the team that could be an underdog in every single one of their games. That's how bad they were. We had trouble finding an offense, like a rookie of the year, any player prop on that entire team. Kyler Murray's come back from some serious damage and has been looking pretty good. I will therefore take the opportunity to say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to all our listeners.
Everybody, drive safe. Don't go off sides in traffic like Kadarius Toney. If you don't appreciate Merry Christmas, let me say Lamari Christmas.
Yes. And look, make sure to check out our NBA Christmas Day episode as well, our regular podcast, our crossover episode with the Cooligans talking about Boxing Day and the English Premier League. We are flush with content, and we'll see you next year.
Happy 2023.
The Underdogs Podcast is a production of Meadowlark Media and the DraftKings Network. Our show is produced by Sarah McCrory. Our executive producer is Neely Lohman. Follow us on Twitter at PeterKeatingNJ and at Jordan Brenner. Tell a friend and subscribe to the Underdogs Podcast anywhere you like to listen, and be sure to tune in again next week.